All right, we are back. I'd like to try and discuss what limited time we have available to us in the third segment here. The very interesting appearance at UC Davis's Mondavi Center on May 5th by the distinguished Edward O. Wilson, one of America's most famous scientists. In fact, Time magazine named him in 1996 one of America's 25 most influential people. Edward O. Wilson has been a professor at Harvard since 1956, one of the foremost ecologists in the world, the man who coined the term biodiversity. A well-respected entomologist, Wilson discovered in the late 1950s how ants communicate through pheromones, and he's perhaps best known as one of the originators and the main proponent of sociobiology, now a major branch of the biological sciences. Wilson's current book, The Future of Life, was listed by Discover magazine as one of the most important science readings that's currently out there. In this book, Wilson forecasts a bleak future for the world's ecosystems unless the conservation movement learns to use economic incentives to reverse environmental destruction. Now, I hate to keep forward promoting here, which we've done already in the show a couple times, but there's just no way we can do justice to Edward O. Wilson's talk in the 10 minutes here that's available to us. We will be returning to many of these topics in the weeks to come. We probably should devote an entire segment in the future to explaining what biodiversity is and why it's so important. Many estimates have shown that perhaps only 20% of the public even has this issue on its radar screen. It's very important and well worth some discussion at length in its own right. Although a Discover magazine sort of paints a bleak, or uses the word bleak, forecasts a bleak future for the world's ecosystems, implying that he's somewhat doom and gloom, I found quite the opposite to be the case in Dr. Wilson's talk. He seemed very optimistic and upbeat and seemed to believe that if we just do a few of the right things, there is great cause to believe that we'll be able to set things right in the 21st century. If we do fail, the loss of biodiversity will not spell the end of humanity. Man will survive. We, however, will be impoverished, and life will be made more difficult. In Wilson's view, the goal for the 21st century will be to find and map, first of all, the organisms that exist in our world. The knowledge that we have is very incomplete. He said that we do not know even within two orders of magnitude. That's, you know, within the factor of 1 to 100, how many species exist on Earth. We have a lot to learn about most types of life. According to Wilson, we've named about 1.4 million species, but that's only the easiest types of organisms categorize. There's something like 600,000 species of beetle, we believe, out there, and we've probably named half of them. I don't know. But he says that of the 1.6 million types of fungi, by estimates, we've named perhaps 60,000. And I was quite taken aback to hear his estimation that a gram of soil taken at random anywhere on the Earth might contain 4,000 to 5,000 unknown species of bacteria. That's compared to the 5,688 bacterial species that presently have been identified. Now, I'm proud to say that I was a biology major at this fine institution here at UC Davis, and I might be inclined to think that Wilson was exaggerating a little, except that in the past few months, I've been hit between the eyes with some new information from the world of biology that would very much tend to support this sort of allegation. Did you know, for example, that what appears to be the most common and numerous organism on Earth was only discovered in the past year? It turns out an organism that they've labeled SAR11 lives in the ocean and it is believed to be the most numerous life form on the planet. It wasn't able to be cultured until very recently, so we just simply didn't know it was there. Its discovery came about because of sophisticated analysis of fragments of DNA from seawater. So it turns out this very tiny bacterium is the most common organism on Earth, and we've now realized that without our awareness of this microbe, models of the ocean have been rather grossly incomplete. So it's amazing how much basic stuff we didn't know and still don't know. About the time I was getting a degree a quarter century ago, we were just learning about life near deep sea vents. We discovered that hot vents in the deep ocean produce hydrogen sulfide and other minerals, which generate an entire ecosystem which is not dependent upon sunlight. So the textbooks are wrong. All life on Earth is not dependent upon sunlight. We've discovered similarly that 2 miles down in the Earth's crust, we find bacteria happily living in the rocks, relying upon inorganic molecules upon which to base a living. Now, as a man interested in biodiversity, a man who in fact coined the phrase, Wilson makes an excellent case for the fact that we've got to get out and preserve some areas on Earth that contain a disproportionate amount of the diversity. Wilson points out that in a tropical rainforest, 1 square meter of the floor of litter that exists below the tree canopy can harbor 250,000 insects, visible to the naked eye. Unfortunately, when habitat is destroyed, the destruction does more damage than you would think on the number of organisms that can survive. In fact, it turns out that something like between the third and sixth root of the number of organisms can survive as areas diminish. In other words, you reduce the tropical rainforest by half, the diversity of life that can be remaining in the existing fragments is reduced more like 90%. In his talk, Wilson pointed out that a loss of diversity comes from the acronym HIPPO, H-I-P-P-O, H, habitat loss, I, invading species, P, pollution, the second P, population growth of humans, and O, over-harvesting. In terms of H, habitat destruction, Wilson showed some very hair-raising slides. One slide showed the Philippines as it existed in the year 1900 as regards a forest. In 1900, the islands were covered in forest. Now, about 10% is left. This also has something to do with the population growth in the Philippines and over-harvesting of forest resources. The solution is to buy and preserve large blocks of land, especially these hotspot regions of diversity, which represent only about 1.4% of the Earth's surface, but contain 44% of the species and 36% of the animals. One way to do this is to just basically buy logging rights and then not log. The Nature Conservancy is an organization that E.O. Wilson supports in doing this. He apparently was one of the founders, and notes that we need to have cooperation between science, government, and private interests acting in concert to make this work. One reason perhaps for Wilson's optimism that his estimation is that with just $28 billion, which by the way is one-third the cost of the war with Iraq, these hotspots could be secured for posterity. He was also optimistic that using proper biological techniques that native plants and animals can help reclaim some niches in spite of the invasion of exotics. Interestingly, E.O. Wilson was the man who first noted that fire ants had arrived in the United States. He discovered that back in 1942 in his native Alabama. And he unfortunately brought us the news that they're on their way to California along with Africanized bees. Eventually, they're going to get here. In the Q&A session, someone asked Wilson about what he thought about using plutonium and uranium to generate power. He said he didn't trust the technology and thinks that hydrogen is the key to the future and the First Nations to embrace hydrogen are going to profit. Now, in an article in The Week magazine a few weeks ago, it stated that in Reykjavik, Iceland is planning to use hydrogen fuel, and by 2015, all vehicles and even power plants are going to be oil-free. Iceland's apparently going to try and rely on geothermal energy, and be interesting to see whether E.O. Wilson's prediction proves correct. If Iceland converts all of its geothermal plants to hydrogen production, it'll have more gas than it needs and start exporting its surplus to the rest of Europe, perhaps becoming a Kuwait of Northern Europe. Wilson didn't make much of a point of this in his talk, but it seems to me one thing that we really need to spend some money and energy on is stopping the invasion of exotic species. Wilson gave an example of the Guam tree snake, which has wiped out all of the songbirds on the island of Guam. It's a poisonous snake. It grows 10 feet in length, and Wilson said it's not my favorite animal. People in Hawaii are extremely nervous about the possibility of this poisonous snake making its way to Hawaii, where it would wreak havoc on the native population. Wilson was a great believer that we need to do something about poverty and population growth. And believe me, population growth is an issue we'll be returning back to on this program. I got a Dateline MSNBC story from December noting that Mexico could lose all of its tropical jungles within decades if the government doesn't seriously hike the amount of money it allocates to deal with deforestation. This is a horrible thing if you have any inkling of what's going on south of the border. You can take a look at satellite photos of southeastern Mexico showing where the Guatemala border is, and it looks like someone drew on the map with a ruler in terms of where there is forest and where there is not forest. So you may want to join me in snagging a copy of The Diversity of Life, Edward O. Wilson's book, which is currently in better bookstores near you. It looks to be a very good read, and Wilson is certainly a man with a lot to say. Unfortunately, I need to report that our tape recorder did not work during Wilson's talk. I was hoping to excerpt a bit of what he had to say out of his own mouth, but it occurs to me that he is an accessible person and might be able to be reached over the telephone lines, and we're going to try and do that and bring you an actual interview with him in the months to come. An enormously interesting man who I think should speak to you directly. All right, we are just about out of time. We are proud to report that on next week's program, we will be bringing you an interview with Democratic presidential candidate Dennis Kucinich. Congressman Kucinich will be in Sacramento about a week and a half from now, over at appearing at Cal State University Sacramento. We'll be telling you more about that next week. And we're very much looking forward to bringing you a real live presidential candidate. All right, let's talk a little music in the last 2 minutes we have available to us. We're going to go to Uncle John's Giant Bathroom Reader, 10th anniversary issue. We were first made aware of the Dr. John series by our regular contributor, Dr. Tony Held of UC Davis. And there's one little blurb in here I think would be the perfect segue as we hand off to Todd Urich's Hometown Atrocities music program, titled Elvis Sings Opera. To quote from Dr. John, in 1956, it would have been impossible to imagine Swivel Hips Elvis Presley singing O Sole Mio. But when he did, it sold 20 million copies. In March 1960, Elvis returned to the U.S. after serving a 2-year hitch in the Army. The new and improved Elvis was now suddenly more acceptable to radio stations that wouldn't go near his material even a year earlier. By the mid-60s, he was winning Grammys for religious music, and eventually, of course, Elvis became a mainstream idol. But it all started, this transition did, with the song It's Now or Never, which was always Elvis's favorite tune. It's based on an Italian operatic theme called O Sole Mio, composed in 1901 by Eduardo Di Capua. It was popularized in America by Mario Lanza, who sang it in Italian, and it was popularized again in 1949 by Tony Martin, who sang an English translation called There's No Tomorrow. Elvis decided to record the song while he was in Germany and told music publisher Eddie Bienstock that he wanted new lyrics to it. So Bienstock goes to New York, goes straight to his office with the news, and there's two songwriters that happened to be working there that day, Wally Gold and Aaron Schroeder. They're told, we want lyrics to O Sole Mio. These guys sit down and in half an hour, knock the lyrics out. They make a demo. They take it back to Elvis. He likes it. He recorded it as exactly as it was in the demo. And It's Now or Never becomes the number one song in the world. And apparently the number one single of Elvis's entire recording career. So, monster hit for Elvis and monster hit for Wally Gold and Aaron Schroeder, who just happened to be in the office that day and devoted a half an hour to composing some new lyrics. I think I need to end this like Paul Harvey. And now you know the rest of the story.
I spent a lifetime waiting for the right time. Now that you're near, the time is here. At last, it's now or never. Come hold me tight. Kiss me, my
darling. This segment was produced by Mr. Edward McMillan. You've been listening to Radio Parallax on KDVS 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Douglas Everett. We'll see you next Thursday with our interview with Congressman and candidate for president, Dennis Kucinich. Stay tuned for Todd Urich and his Hometown Atrocities program.
Just like a willow, we would cry an ocean if we lost true love and sweet devotion. Your lips excite me. let your arms invite me, for who knows when